Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Trae Young weaving and again got stripped by Javonte. The lead pass, Zach LaVine with a 360 slam dunk.
I mean, I think it's important to me what, you know, you get paid what you value that. And, you know, I see myself as top guy in this league, and I think I've proven that over the last 4 years. And, you know, I think that's what, you know, we're going in to negotiate. And I think that's what, you know, Mark, AK, you know, that's what, you know, him, Rich, gonna have to discuss.
The highlight courtesy of Sports Radio 670, The Score, your home for Bulls basketball with Chuck Swirsky on the call with Bill Weddington. And then you heard from Zach LaVine. And I think Zach wanted to be wined and dined a little bit. And wanted to take his little tour and enjoy the opportunity of free agency. And why not? He's earned it. He's entitled to it. But all along the way, what have we been saying about the likelihood of his return? Just looking at the overall landscape, about how much money he can make here that he cannot make elsewhere. And the fact that the Bulls have been very clear about wanting him back. There's been no ulterior motives. It doesn't look like there's been any sort of shadow subtext to anything that we have known publicly. So this is from Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report. Two-time All-Star Zach LaVine is expected to re-sign with the Chicago Bulls once the free agency negotiation period opens June 30th, sources told Bleacher Report. LaVine's free agencies generated plenty of conversation among NBA personnel over the past few weeks, but despite rumblings that the Portland Trailblazers, San Antonio Spurs, Atlanta Hawks, and Los Angeles Lakers will make plays for LaVine, the coveted swingman is likely to remain with his current team. Ironing out, LaVine's next deal appears centered on the fifth year of the contract. LaVine's eligible for a five-year deal totaling roughly $200 million. Whether that season's fully guaranteed is a player option or nets other potential outcomes remains to be seen. Bleacher Report previously wrote about LaVine's purported desire to be a team's unquestioned offensive centerpiece, like the setup with DeMar DeRozan. But among the teams in play for LaVine, only San Antonio could offer a clear number one playmaking opportunity. And the Spurs are considered far from postseason environment that LaVine prefers. The Bulls are invested in finding the optimal front court linchpin to pair with LaVine and DeRozan. This is where it starts to get interesting. Chicago continues to explore the trade market for two-time All-Star center Nikola Vucevic, sources said. It has registered interest in Rudy Gobert, but the Bulls do not appear willing to include Patrick Williams alongside Vucevic in a trade package for Gobert. Chicago is actively discussing the number 18 pick and Kobe White with rival teams. Now, I don't know if that means the 18 pick and Kobe White as a package, or if it means the 18 pick and or Kobe White in anything that they could be doing. I think this is all common sense. I think we understood that there has never really been a question. There's never been anything to some of these pie in the sky rumors. Some of them maybe perhaps generated understandably by the folks in LaVine's camp or Clutch Sports, because that's how the game is played. And it's why you always look askance at some of the rumors that you hear, even as it provides content for discussion. You never take your eye off what these likelihoods are. So he comes back, and then the key is figuring out what that next piece is. I remain focused on how they're going to overcome what DeRozan isn't while taking advantage of what he also is. And that is going to mean more three-point shooting from somewhere. It's going to mean legit bench three-point shooting, a vastly improved bench if they want to win a playoff series, or let alone even think about the idea of winning two playoff series at this point. If they're going to trade that number 18 pick, I think we can start speculating as to what that may mean, what that may tell us. And could be you're just pricing it, and they're looking at their list, their cloud of players around 18, and then you match those names up against developmental pieces that are already in the Bulls system. And I'm not sure who the genuine developmental prospects are. Maybe they're not here yet. Whether or not Marko Simanović is one of those remains to be seen. You would have to know that they spent a draft pick on him and brought him over, so that commitment is definitely there. I don't think it's somebody like Devin Dotson or some of these in-betweener two-way guys who they expect are all of a sudden going to turn around and be material players for them. But, or, you know, Tyler Cook or all these other names that we saw. Simanović might be the name there if they think there's a guy who spent most of the season on the actual NBA roster and practicing with NBA players. They may see a next step being taken there. So always understand there's that developmental lens. But there will be this. It's almost like Patrick Williams is in that Luis Robert kind of situation here, where you see all the tools and traits to be an all-star, and much of the team's success or failure is going to be determined by his individual level of improvement. I was having the discussion last night, just in the house as we were watching the game, that when Andrew Wiggins is doing what he does, I love the high pick late bloomer. I don't know why. I just the idea of someone unquestionably talented who takes time to put in the work to realize the talent. I mean, some people just are have naturally given abilities then and a sense for the game and a basketball intelligence that can't be taught, and they're just great, and they're just preternaturally good. But when you see someone who is a young toolsy prospect who puts it together to get good, to be a significant, substantial player in the NBA finals like that, there's something satisfying about that. And I think it's a really good lesson. It's a good sports lesson for people that no matter how skilled you are, no matter where you're valued in a draft, nothing's promised to you until you put in the work. And to see how satisfying it can be to watch that happen, more so than maybe it always put upon, you know, some second round pick who's just like, yeah, no, they never thought anything of me. I like the story where it's like, yeah, people did think very, very highly of you, and then it kind of took time for the light to go on. If Patrick Williams is watching Andrew Wiggins and is seeing some of this here and seeing what can be done, that you don't, your future, the die isn't necessarily cast at any point until you decide it is, that remains hugely important. Now, we have the issue here of who's now the big. If Gobert is off the table, and I know Rick Camp, you know a lot of these names too. If Gobert is off the table, we have brought up DeAndre Ayton. I brought up Mitchell Robinson. There have been some other. Is Chris Boucher a free agent?
Yes, he is.
And he's rail thin, but long and athletic, and can hit a three with his feet set. Does that intrigue you?
I don't trust him as much to be a starter. And also at this point, I think he started a little late. He's 29 actually already.
Boucher is?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So,
I didn't know that.
That doesn't necessarily, like, for the timeline of this team, completely take him off the table, but I wonder if he could handle the minute load to start and play like 30-ish minutes all year long, because he gets hurt as is when he's playing in that 20 to 25 minute range. So because of how slight he is, I wonder about that.
Okay.
A name that was actually also mentioned as kind of probably being back in play in that Jake Fisher article is one that's been brought up a lot for the Bulls, and it would be a trade. But if Miles Turner is available, depending what that price is, that would be maybe the perfect fit. A guy that is, or at least as close to perfect as you'll get. because he's a rim-protecting big, one of the best ones in the league. He can hit a three-point shot. He's comfortable working on the outside. The only slight downside is for a center and for a guy of his size, he's not the best rebounder in the world. So last year when he played, mind you, only played 42 games, 12.9 points, 7.1 boards, but averaged 2.8 blocks. He's led the league in blocks twice. He's been over 2 blocks a game for each of the last 4 years and 5 of his 7.
And yet the Bulls are not listed as a potential destination in this story, where he writes that rival teams are monitoring the Pacers' potential to jettison veteran talent, just as they offloaded Domantas Sabonis before the trade deadline. Indiana explored the market for Miles Turner before his season ended because of a stress reaction in his left foot. They've resumed trade conversations. Turner is a versatile center, close enough in age to Tyrese Halliburton, the prized return for Sabonis, but Indiana's openly projected a willingness to further steer into a rebuild. And Mark Stein noted that Turner's impending free agency in 23 seems to be grounds for the Pacers to re-engage his trade market. The Hornets have been considered a landing spot. They've communicated a willingness to move the number 15 pick. The Raptors want a starting caliber center. The Knicks expressed interest in Turner before the deadline. I don't see the Bulls' name listed here, but that might be just about right for them.
Yeah, but Turner's skill set is, he's so versatile, or at least like what he does well is needed by so many teams. Like Charlotte would be perfect because they do not have much in terms of defense.
No.
So Kenny Atkinson coming in could say, hey, get me some sort of center like he had Jared Allen when he was in Brooklyn. That could be a thing. Also, Toronto, just like it just makes sense for Toronto because they need shooting desperately and they wouldn't have to sacrifice defense for him. That could definitely be a thing. And a team that's been mentioned recently with Ayton that would make sense is Atlanta. Like if Atlanta's trying to move some of their bigger pieces to get stuff that maybe fits a little bit better or what they want to do moving forward, that could be something there. It just keeps feeling like the name that comes back to, at least free agency wise for the Bulls, is Mitchell Robinson. And there's pros and cons to him, but considering where his number is going to be, I think that makes a whole lot of sense, especially when you start to think of, and this is probably a bigger conversation to have closer to free agency, about the Bulls' willingness to go into the tax and what that means for all the other moves they can make. Because you can see with the Warriors right now, to go to another Bulls-Warriors comparison there, what they're able to do because they're willing to pay whatever it is in tax.
Right.
Like they're paying $170 million in luxury tax alone.
I don't think it's time. My problem with the Bulls relative to the tax is DeRozan's age.
What does it matter, though? Like, I understand there's repeater tax and all that stuff, but if you're willing to pay tax and you're trying to get better now, and better now means into the second round of the playoffs and into the conference finals, as unlikely as that might be without a big move, if they're saying they're willing to pay tax, then pay tax.
For right now, I wish so many roads didn't lead back to DeRozan for me and lead back to what we see in the playoffs and what we see where his best skill, what he does best, just isn't that valuable in the NBA. When you start, you know, watching some of these games that we're seeing in the finals and how the points are scored, and you love the guy and you know how good he is, but as long as he's a part of this, it forces you to get so many of those threes or more possessions or grabbing that offensive rebound or forcing more turnovers, making up for some of that, some of the frequency of 2-point shots that are just worth less on balance, you know, even when he is defending and not falling down all the time. I would be very, very surprised if the Bulls this year announced a willingness to go into the tax. I really would. I understand it to win a title. I don't know that I would spend $150 million in tax to make the second round of the playoffs.
I mean, the Warriors are like had to get so deep into it to get to anything close to that level in terms of the tax, but the thing is, at some point, if you want to say, like, what then what's your threshold? If the Bulls are a conference finals team, then it's okay to pay the luxury tax? Because, like, that's one thing I'm noticing I'm changing on is, just as an observer for basketball and as a fan in general, is just if you're going to try and win and you're actually going to do it, then be willing to pay for it. That's all. Because if you're putting your own artificial deadlines on this, like there's a clip going viral of from last night of Brian Windhorst mentioning, well, it's almost not fair because the Warriors are paying so much for their roster. You know what the Warriors are willing to do? Pay for the roster.
Pay for their roster, yeah.
But whereas Boston made a trade, and mind you, I forget who they unloaded, but it was basically a nothing trade towards the end of their roster, but just another sign of they made a deal that technically made their roster worse to get under the luxury tax. And it's one thing if you tell me at the deadline, hey, the Bulls are, you know, they're getting rid of a guy that doesn't matter at the end of the roster away from getting out of the tax, and then there's, you know, strategic stuff moving forward with that, fine, if it's that close. But if it's, hey, we're willing to pay, we want to be this free agent destination, if you're going to talk the talk as a franchise, you got to be willing to walk the walk. And I'm not necessarily saying this is the offseason for it, but when an opportunity presents itself, are they willing to do it? And to what extent are they willing to do it? That's where this is all going to come to a head, whether it's DeRozan or whatever, but just operating with Zach as a max player, as you're going to be, as he should be considering the market. This is another way that you can make yourself better, is to be able to, hey, be willing to take money. And even though, yeah, there has to be a balance in terms of the trades, you know, be willing to do that type of thing and be willing to have a guy that's going to make you better, even if he might be a little overpaid for the sake of tax money.
How many teams go into the tax that don't have the guy? However you want to get him and however you want to talk about the fatalism of it's hard to find that guy. Zach is a guy. I think we're all agreed he's not the best player on a champion. And even if we don't set an artificial ceiling and say, reach the finals, reach the conference finals, how many teams are in the tax who don't have somebody who is in that conversation as the best player on a champion? That's what I'm wondering. Because I think that's when you do it. I think when you the time to go into the tax is when you have an all-time great who can be the best player on your trophy winner.
11 teams are in the tax this year.
Okay.
So let me look at this. The Lakers, okay.
Yeah.
Atlanta. Is Trae Young the dude? He functions as the dude.
They act like he is.
The Mavericks, okay, you got Luka.
You got the dude.
The Sixers, sure.
Got the dude.
Does Utah have the dude?
No.
Okay. Denver has the dude.
Yep.
Boston. Yep. Brooklyn. Milwaukee, Golden State, Clippers. So okay. Most do. Most right. Have the dude. And the interesting part about the Atlanta thing is I don't remember if this past year was when Trae Young's extension kicked in, but that might even be with him on his rookie deal still.
Woof. Yeah, and maybe that's why we're seeing Atlanta being talked about as making a desperate, massive trade for Rudy Gobert right now, too. Because they're feeling a lot more pressure than the Bulls if that's what they're spending.
Yeah, their ownership too.
Yep. Well, Brian Geltzeiler has thoughts on the NBA Finals and everything we're talking about. So keep it here for Geltzy next on The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Wiggins drives and finishes! Exclamation! exclamation point from Andrew Wiggins.
Everyone's just excited, you know, just showing love and, you know, support, and everyone's happy. You know, we're one win away from, you know, winning a championship, you know, so everyone's excited.
Andrew Wiggins making something of himself and doing what was frankly expected of him when he was drafted. I don't think anybody expected this game to have this kind of complexion to it, because the Warriors are now the first team in NBA history to miss 30 or more three-pointers, shoot at least 15 fewer free throws than their opponent, have a rebound margin of minus 5 or worse, and yet still win the game, regular season or postseason. Teams previously with those thresholds, I'm going to give them to you again, missing 30 or more threes, shooting a minimum of 15 fewer free throws than the opponent, and having a rebound margin of negative 5 or worse, those teams had been 0-27 all time until last night. I mean, I don't even know where to go with that. We're looking forward to having a conversation with Brian Geltzeiler of SiriusXM NBA in just a couple of moments. The game last night had an odd complexion to it, the whole thing. But we had a discussion the other day during transition about how difficult it is to quantify the value of Draymond Green. That was it. I think it was 8, 8, and 7. Fine. I mean, if you start and whatever hard numbers you want to use, but if you saw his significance to spacing and the extra pass and little things that led to big things, switching up the angle of a screen, and he doesn't even have to score a lot to be valuable as an offensive player. When he puts it on the floor, when he makes himself aggressive enough to be guarded and knows that someone is coming toward him, or maybe an extra guy is coming toward him, the stuff that was opening up defensively was tremendous. And in a lot of ways, you can measure it geometrically. You can do it graphically. Somebody can walk you through film and say, here's what he did here. And it's not stuff that necessarily shows up for you in a box score. And then he'll probably tell you about that on his. And was it Scott Van Pelt who Draymond got mad that he was referred to as a member of the media after the game? And I would just say you can't have it both ways, because he's after every game, his post game isn't really in the locker room or there on the dais. His post game is when he gets back to his hotel room or wherever he goes and sets up his podcast. That's a first. That's kind of pioneering stuff. And that's going to change the way the business is conducted for some of these players who do have the wherewithal and the infrastructure to actually podcast after every game. I think it's great. And obviously you want them to fulfill their media responsibilities at that point. But I think it's if somebody wants to take control and have that kind of accountability and spend half an hour, 45 minutes after games, and here's what happened, here's why it happened, I'm absolutely for that. I was trying to think of other people to add to that Wiggins list of maybe late bloomer, high first round picks, lottery picks that take a little bit of time to show you how good they are. I don't know if Steph Curry counts anymore. Was he 7th overall? Where was Mo Bamba taken? Was he 4th?
He was.
Because that would be
no. He was 6th because it was right before the Bulls took Wendell Carter.
But that would be another guy on my list. You know, Mo Bamba, if he gets good, somebody who has that talent gestation period that maybe we're talking about with Patrick Williams. Brian Geltzeiler is on Twitter at GeltzNBA, and he joins us on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. You can follow him there on Twitter. You can hear him SiriusXM NBA and read his work at hoopscritic.com. Geltzy, I was just looking at some of the numbers of improbability of it's the first time ever that a team's missed 30 or more threes, shot at least 15 fewer free throws than the opponent, have a rebound margin of minus 5 or worse, and has won the game regular season or postseason. I never thought I would see a game quite like it.
No, hey, listen, it was bizarre. I mean, if I had told you at the beginning of the series that a game five was going to be won by the Golden State Warriors, Steph Curry would not hit a three-pointer, and that the best player on the floor for both teams was Andrew Wiggins, you would ask me what the hell I was smoking, Dan, right? I mean, seriously, that's how crazy that got last night. But, again, the Celtics decided we are not going to let Curry beat us. We are going to challenge the rest of these guys out there to see who else could beat us. 9 of 40 from three. Those guys stand there and shoot wide open threes. Wiggins included, by the way. I'm talking about Andrew Wiggins being the best player on the floor. The dude was 0 of 6 from 3. And that was what was so interesting last night. But I think the lesson to be learned in all of this, you want to win NBA titles. I get the math. I get 3 is greater than 2. I understand all of that, Dan. But here is the other part of this. Mid-range matters. Two-point shots matter. And you know what? Boston abandoned it last night, and Golden State lived with it. 32 of 48 from two-point range for the Golden State Warriors last night was the most important number. With that said, I actually will tell you that I really did think that Boston played very good defense last night as a team, and I think they lost the game on the offensive end of the floor.
Yeah, somewhere DeMar DeRozan just heard you say that and stood up and said, yes! Yes, that's how it works. That it can work. There is value there.
Dan, I always go back to this, okay? 2013, everybody talks about the Ray Allen shot and what it did for the Miami Heat in helping them advance to a game 7 in that series. But everybody forgets what LeBron James did in game 7, 37 points and 12 rebounds, all of it on mid-range jumpers. You want to win championships, you need to be able to hit mid-range jumpers. Okay, it's nothing. Threes are important, don't get me wrong. But great defenses, and these are the two best defenses in the league by every objective measure, including advanced analytics and quantifying. They were the defensive efficiency, number 1 and number 2. Boston, number 1, and Golden State, by the way, right there, right up with them as number 2. Two best defenses in the league. And again, this is being won. And one of the reasons of two best defenses in the league is because of how well they guard the perimeter. But we saw last night, we saw a series that was, you know, that Golden State's on the cusp of winning based upon what they can do from two-point range.
One thing I love about playoff series is the psychology at this level. And it was some of my favorite stuff to talk about when covering the Bulls, whether it was Phil Jackson matching wits with Jerry Sloan or George Karl or Pat Riley, how you feel when a team, we can talk about it all day, but the way it's coached, on the one hand, there's no possible way, if we look at the improbability of that win, if I'm Ime Udoka, my message to my team is, do that again. You do that again, we're going to win by a lot. Because the number of factors, if Andrew Wiggins wants to beat us again, and all of those factors, and Draymond Green's gonna be that effective and efficient. Go ahead and let him do that again. On the other hand, if you're Steve Kerr, you can say, we won that game. If you think that Steph is gonna shoot like that again, we know that ain't gonna happen. This could be another 40 piece from Steph. You know, there's two angles on this thing. But if I'm Boston, I'm very comfortable telling my team, great job. If you do that again, we are going to win.
Yes, listen, I think for Boston, it's actually a lot simpler than it is for Golden State. Because I think for Boston, it's a couple things. Number one, we got to take care of the basketball better. Period. Game, set, match, Dan. We got it. Like, Jaylen Brown dribbling through crowds. It hasn't worked. It's not going to work. He needs to stop trying to make it work. And that's been a big problem. The second thing, they had their best moments last night when they were disciplined in hunting out matchups. And they got away from that in the fourth quarter of that game. When they were able to get Tatum with Curry on him or with Looney on him or with Poole on him, you saw what happened. Steve Kerr had to call timeout early in the third quarter and double every Tatum switch that went on to Curry. Because they had struggled so much with dealing with that. So and they stopped hunting out those matchups. The other thing is this: they let their heads get the best of them. They got taken out of that game mentally.
How so?
Because you know what? They started to play the officials instead of play the game. And Udoka led the charge. Listen, I thought Mark Davis with 2 T's had a very quick hook, and I wasn't pleased with that. I look at at the amount of slack they cut Draymond Green, and they didn't cut Marcus Smart or Ime Udoka for that matter, even a close enough amount of slack. And that bothered me. It really did. I'm not thrilled with the officiating here, and I think that's something the league's going to have to address in just everything being called even regarding with technical fouls, because Draymond gets away with murder in terms of what he does. I mean, listen, think about what Udoka got a T for. All right, for crossing out of the coach's box to yell at Mark Davis. All right, and think about Marcus Smart, who got a T for complaining in Davis's face on the court. And then Draymond Green followed Jason Tatum back to the bench with 3 minutes left because he wanted the ball. Think about that. And where was the T on Draymond then? There was no T on Draymond then. So I think some of that, but the Celtics can't worry about that. And they started to worry about that last night. So I think those three things are all fixable for Boston. I look at Golden State, and I know Steve. I watch Steve Kerr coach enough, know him enough to know that he is not going to necessarily rest on his laurels here with what happens, because he understands he's got to make adjustments. They have to figure out a way to get Curry open. And I think a lot of it is going to be to take him off the ball a little bit. Because last night, I thought the Celtics, the way they handled high pick and roll, which is what ate them alive earlier in the series, I thought they did a super, super job handling the high pick and roll. I really did. I thought they were terrific with it. So, you know, and again, if they guarded Curry so well, they face guarded him. Marcus Smart was up on him, did a super job on him. And he put Tatum on him for a time. And actually that hurt Tatum offensively. But where Udoka is going to have to go make what's not going to be such an easy adjustment is who else is going to play besides his five starters. Listen, they played Grant Williams 21 minutes last night, and if we're being kind, Dan, he was lost.
He had one really nice sequence. He had that rip steal from behind when then he leaked out for the layup on the other end. That was by far his most efficient play of the night.
Yes, Andy, it was that great block he had from behind.
Yes, that's what that was.
Yes, yeah, that was a really, really nice play. But beyond that, he didn't have much going on. And let's be honest about Derek White, he was terrible. He was terrible. So Pritchard played 5 minutes and looked overmatched. He's got to trust somebody outside those five guys. And listen, I game six of the finals, I don't know that you can, but when he went to Tatum on Curry, and I understand what he's doing, and he's right about this, you absolutely have to have different looks on Steph Curry. He gets comfortable. And if he gets comfortable and starts to understand a guy's tendencies guarding him, and I think that started to happen in game four with Marcus Smart, you have to switch looks. Problem is, you're switching looks to put Tatum on him, and you got the ball in Tatum's hands all the time. And Tatum and Brown, with 8 minutes left in that game, were exhausted. Playing them the entire third quarter was not a wonderful idea by Ime Udoka. And he's going to have to figure out how to either, A, manage the rotation a little bit better to get those guys more strategic rest, or B, dig a little deeper into his bench. Listen, I was talking to my partner Sam Mitchell doing NBA Radio this morning. Neither of us understand why they don't give Aaron Nesmith more of a chance. Now, again, game six of the NBA Finals, it's too late for that, I think. I mean, you could probably try to buy 3 to 5 minutes in the second quarter with him and see how he does and see where that goes. But Nesmith's a good athlete, man. And right now in this series, you need athletes. Wiggins showed you last night what the most athletic guy on the floor can do. And that's the other thing about Wiggins last night, okay? Andrew Wiggins on the floor with Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Marcus Smart was the best athlete on that floor by a large margin.
Yeah, I learned something too about watching Steph Curry, and it's the opposite of Luka in that Luka loves to have somebody on either side of him, loves his defender. We've talked about it before, how if a defender on his hip makes him comfortable, defenders in front of him or behind him are what's effective. It's the opposite with Steph Curry. If you just defend him in the vertical plane, if you're trying to sandwich him or bracket him in that regard, he can stop and pop. He can get you leaning back a little bit, or he's just going to take another step back. Where you stress him out and make him work a little bit is defending him laterally, of making him move a little bit before he shoots or where he catches. And that, depending on who's responsible for doing that, it's just, you can tell that his balance, you throw him off a little bit more. I mean, to the extent that you can when you're committing yourself to lateral defense of him.
Well, yeah, that's absolutely it. I mean, because what does he do? Curry finds more room at the three-point line than any guy I've ever seen. Like, he will, it's, and that's exactly it. It's the shot fake. It's the one step laterally. And because his release is so fast, it's all he actually needs. He also does something that for every other player in the league is a bad shot. He will, but it's not a bad shot for him. He will take that duck under three, Dan. He will go with that little duck under yep. three where you'll come up high from the side on him. He will, he'll lower his head, come up underneath you. His feet are still behind the line, and he will find a way to square up and get a shot off. It's incredible. It's absolutely amazing. But it, this is who you're defending, and this is who you're guarding. And I almost feel like, and the Warriors did some of this last night, and let's be frank about this. He didn't play bad last night, even though he didn't shoot well. He still had 16 points and 8 assists and made a significant impact on the game. He really did. I thought he played a really, really good game, and even though he shot 0 of 9. But it's you defending him is really, really difficult. But you start to take him off the ball, and what's going to happen? Listen, I will tell you, the immediate answer is to run more backdoor. They're going to overplay him on the perimeter and overplay the three-point line. And the second he gets going to the basket, they're going to have to, when you start running backdoor, devote more help side defenders, which is going to create weak side space for your other guys. And one thing we've seen here with Wiggins, he will attack off the weak side. He gets that ball swung to him. He will attack the rim. And that was the key. Listen, I go back to what I said earlier in the spot here, Dan. 32 of 48 from two. That is absolutely enormous. And that's something that if I'm the Celtics, I have to, yes, I want to continue to play defense in a similar way I did because the twos are better than threes in terms of what they're giving up. But I will also say this. I do have to be concerned with a lot less of what Thompson did, but I got to be concerned a lot more with what Wiggins did.
Hardcore hoops junkie stuff. We can always count on that from Brian Geltzeiler. Geltzy, appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Always my pleasure, Dan. Thanks, bud. Take care.
Brian Geltzeiler on Twitter, at GeltzNBA. When we come back, a baseball stat that shows you how the universe harmonizes with itself.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr. into the second deck.
Vladito, thanks to Sportsnet Toronto. You're thinking, well, what the hell? Why are you playing a home run by Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? Well, first of all, because you can't get enough of it because he's absolutely awesome. And this is a tweet yesterday from Hector Gomez. Check this out. Vladimir Guerrero has played 403 career Major League Baseball games. 403 games. He has 87 home runs and an on-base percentage of 363. Another player in his first 403 MLB games had the exact same number of home runs, 87, and to the thousandth, the exact same on base percentage, 363. That player, Vladimir Guerrero Sr. How about it? The baseball universe harmonizing with itself. 87 home runs in 403 games, on base percentage of 363. Both Vlad Guerrero Sr. and Vlad Guerrero Jr., and both fun to watch and fun to root for. Transition with Lawrence Holmes next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.